What am I doing with my keys?
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's all right,
John. I drove here, so they're in the vicinity.
It's all right.
I pushed the button to lock my car because there's nothing in it and it's impossible to steal. But for some reason, I thought maybe a vagrant would use it as a bathroom or something.
Oh, in front of my, you know, well-guarded neighborhood house. What? With
you can't be too careful. Yeah. They're everywhere.
The darker side people.
It's a sausage fest here right now.
It is a sausage fest.
I love it.
Welcome to the Darker Side Podcast, where we delve into the darker side of our existences. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair game as we discuss murder, UFOs, cryptids, creepypasta, the paranormal, and the dark depravity of the human soul. I am David, and with me today is Forrest and Herman. How are we today, boys?
Fucking awesome.
They're doing good, doing good.
Yeah. Fucking awesome, man.
Nice little early morning chat we got going on here.
Coffee talk.
Oh, yeah, brunch time. I love brunch.
All right, guys. Well, we got something first to let everybody know. Rachel, my beloved wife and awesome co-host up to this point, is no longer going to be on the Darker Side podcast.
We will miss her.
We will miss her dearly. She will show up from time to time as a guest speaker researcher and everything. And she is no longer with us.
The
Darker Side podcast.
Yeah, gee, that's grim to put it that way.
She's with us. She's still alive.
She is.
And beautiful as ever, so.
Hell yeah.
All right, guys. It's time for today's sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
Today's sponsor is You Think We Care Corporation. You Think We Care Corp is dedicated to making your lives easier by making you think we care about you and your family. We sell you products, drugs, food, and a plethora of other items that make you think you will be better and cooler and even be cured of what ails you. But deep down inside, all we care about is our profits. You think we care, and we are okay with that. Now back to our regularly scheduled program.
I really like their lip balm, actually.
You think we care.
The cherry You Think We Care lip balm is wonderful.
Yeah, dude.
I put it all over my lips.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of their vegan meat.
Yeah, which is actually made out of meat.
Yes, most likely, I'm sure. All right, guys. We are going to get into our news stories today. All of us have got a news story, so it's going to be the way it goes. Three news stories and some other fun stuff. All right, well, I'm going to start off with my news story. The title of this news story is Lions Dismember Suspected Rhino Poachers in South Africa.
Fuck yeah.
Eat it, guys.
Exactly.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, man. On Tuesday night, rangers in the Subia Game Reserve in Kentington-on-the-Sea, South Africa, stumbled upon the dismembered remains of a human man inside their lion camp. Scattered nearby were a hunting rifle with a silencer, wire cutters, and a long axe. According to the local news agency, Herald Live, these items of a decidedly unfriendly nature, no matter what context they're found in, are particularly suspicious considering the encompassing Eastern Cape province has been a hotspot of rhino poaching in recent years. So far this year, 9 rhinos in the region have been killed, and just last week, a southern white rhino female at the nearby Kraga Kama Game Park was killed by horn traffickers, even though only 1 centimeter of her creatine appendage remained, and the rest had been removed as an anti-poaching precaution.
Whoa.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it already had most of its horn cut off, but kept alive, because, you know, they wanted to save the rhino's actual fucking life, but then... Yeah. Poachers come in and just take the rest. What a bunch of fucking pieces of shit, man. National Geographic reports that 1,028 rhinos were poached across South Africa last in 2017.
Holy crap.
Yeah, man, there's really not much.
How's the meat, though?
Yeah. They don't take the meat. That's the problem. They just leave a giant dead corpse there. Returning to the scene on Wednesday morning to investigate in daylight and search for other poachers, local police discovered more body parts strewn among the bushes, enough to constitute 2 or possibly 3 individuals per. Wow. These lions have been killing poachers.
It's the circle of life, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
For safety, the six lions who live in the large enclosure were tranquilized by a veterinarian to, you know, so that they could search long, you know, the area for more. Jesus. Hey, you know, you get up in a lion encampment, you better fucking know how to kill or be killed. Or yep. First off, don't go there because you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, that's pretty much the whole story. And you know, you fuck with lions, there's a good chance you're going to be their food.
I mean,
you're an easy prey to them.
Yeah, you are.
Especially if there are three females. Yeah. You ever watch those guys hunting in the wild? Mm-hmm. You don't want to fuck with those ladies.
And you are made of meat. Never forget that.
Exactly.
As Nirvana.
You are the perfect food for those carnivores.
Yeah. I would say, as Nirvana says it, nature is a bitch.
Mm.
Nature is a bitch.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's my news story for today. A little grim tale of lions killing off some poachers. So
it sort of has a happy ending, though, which it does. Like.
I'm all for that ending.
Mm-hmm.
Happy, you know, dark ending.
Lions are my spirit animal, so
nice.
Anything to protect those and the fucking rhinos, dude.
Yep, and the rhinos, they're beautiful,
peaceful, majestic creatures on the planet, and you want to kill them that way.
Ugh.
All right, Forrest. Well, what do you got for us today, bro?
Okay, I'm just going to go right into this news story. It's pretty interesting. It's very dark and creepy. And, I mean, I think everyone should be at least a little worried about this.
I'm already terrified.
A little worried. People are afraid of what's inside Egypt's newly discovered 2,000-year-old sarcophagus, but it should be opened anyway.
Well, it should technically. I mean, the thing about, I guess, this sarcophagus is that it's closed, and the mortar that originally closed it is still there, which makes it a complete anomaly. And when it comes to the archaeological finds in Egypt, like the Egypt background, because the majority of those tombs have already been raided, they've already been pillaged by people who knew what they were, which means that nobody knew that this actually existed.
Yep, it's crazy. This massive black sarcophagus was found in Alexandria, Egypt. It should be opened so we can see what's inside. Egyptian Ministry of Antiquities / Facebook. An Egyptian archaeological mission found an enormous sarcophagus, the largest ever to be found in Alexandria, made from a striking black marble.
Oh, beautiful.
It is a beautiful. Have you seen the sarcophagus?
No, I'll have to look at the pictures.
It's very beautiful, but oh my God. It's just dark. Dark as fuck.
So the original glue is holding together. Is it, oh, look at that. That is fantastic craftsmanship. So if the original glue is holding it together, everything that's inside of it is conceivably sealed inside.
And the problem is they would have to get it into like a hermetically sealed building to actually open this up to preserve what's inside.
And I hope it's like a sealed off building where, like, you know,
deep underground.
I like that hermetically has your name in it.
Oh, yeah. It's hermetically sealed.
It's hermetically sealed.
Going forward, experts have not yet determined to whom the tomb belongs. I was quoting Mustafa Wasiri, the ministry's general secretary, told Yahoo News earlier this month. When Science Alert reported the existence of the mysterious sarcophagus on Wednesday, people immediately warned against opening it.
Which is everybody's fear, exactly. This is like the mummy come to life.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I'm sorry. It is creepy, but it would unleash a curse that would bring 1,000 years of darkness to all of humanity. I'm sorry. I mean, it could happen. They argued. Every mummy movie tells us to leave it alone, they said. I mean, maybe Hollywood's right. Who knows? But hey, let's open the damn thing anyway. We know mummy curses aren't real. They're a made-up thing in books and movies. I know that's something someone would say in a mummy movie, but still.
Well, you know, we as a society might be responsible for a lot of these things just by thinking of them. So we could technically create a mummy if the thousands of people who were tweeting about it have now put it into existence.
Oh, well, very good. Can we get Brendan Fraser to open it
up? Brendan Fraser.
Or Tom Cruise. Wasn't he just in the newest Mummy one?
Tom Cruise gets too much work. I think Brendan Fraser actually needs to go
open
to
bring back Encino Man for sure.
He would probably want his stuntman to be in it, but...
Well, no, he needs to do it. He needs to suit up and open that thing up and see what happens.
Getting like a contamination suit. Yeah, one of those things.
I like it.
Oh, man. And then there is a little bit more stuff on it. We have only one clue to what the sarcophagus contains, this really nice black marble sarcophagus. An alabaster bust found nearby, probably of the owner. But it's been degraded over time, and we have no other records, so it's not really helpful.
It kind of looks like a Slender Man face.
Wait, that's what they discovered inside?
Yeah, that's the alabaster bust. So we're showing a picture of that right now for all of you who can't see through the radio.
That looks really...
It kind of looks like a rock that's vaguely head-shaped. Like, I've seen more detail in clouds.
Well, wait. I think it's just been degraded over so much time that it now just looks like a Slenderman face, like just a blank white face.
Or what if that's a perfect likeness?
That is insane. I'm, like, blown away right now. That's just...
Yeah. That would be interesting.
That is a fantastic story.
Wow!
Thank you for us. That's beautiful.
All of us crazy. You know, the lovers of the interesting and the spooky are going to be keeping an eye on this story to find out what they do with it, where they find it, and I'm sure I fucking love science. We'll post it on Facebook to find or some group like that. Thanks, Forrest. That's a great story, man.
Thank you.
That's lovely. And when the world starts to come to an end, we will definitely be at the forefront recording
live recording it
the plague hit America
from sunny Massachusetts,
live tweeting it and live podcasting it
right from the cradle of history in Massachusetts, cradle of America, I should say.
Now, Herman, what do you got for a news story, bro?
Well, I would say possibly even more important. So England, I shouldn't say England because really it's Scotland, but the United Kingdom officially has determined what they're going to do if they ever catch the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, good. That's important.
That's good, then.
So, I mean, although Nessie may be a mythical creature, they really have formulated a plan as to what exactly they're going to do. The Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, which is also an aquatic animal, told Good Morning Britain last month that she believed the Loch Ness Monster, or Nessie, is real. And therefore, they determined what they're going to do. And to shorten this up a little bit, what their plan is they're going to capture the Loch Ness Monster as gently as they possibly can, extract some DNA, and throw the thing right back in the water. So for all you fishermen, it's sort of like when you catch a trout and you just chuck it right back in.
Wait, so really they're going to do that?
They're just going to grab some blood or hair or fur. They didn't really talk about where they're going to get the DNA from. I'm really hoping they're not going to the dinosaur.
That's if Nessie lets them.
Well,
if Nessie lets them,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that is their plan, is to find Nessie and extract some DNA and then throw Nessie right back in the water.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and then P.T. Barnum is going to want to, you know, pay somebody to find it again and kill it and put it on display somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he still has a price on Nessie's head.
Oh, God.
Also, somebody's going to Jurassic Park Nessie, and then there's just going to be like a SeaWorld filled with man-created Nessies.
Yeah, because
DNA.
Yeah, because SeaWorld no longer can have killer whales and other sea creatures.
It seems irresponsible to house a killer whale.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not called friendly whales.
I mean, they don't kill, though.
Oh, they do. Watch Blackfish.
That's my story, as short as it is. I just thought it was nice that the United Kingdom actually weighed in on a cryptid and said that it was real.
Yeah.
I'm happy they did.
It's kind of like when our CDC here in America said, well, here is what you need to do in case of an actual zombie apocalypse. Here is our rules. Here are things.
That was brilliant marketing, because it's actually what you need to do in case of any sort of apocalypse that even just shuts
massive
down the
emergency.
Shuts down the roads, like the
electromagnetic pulses, you know, any type of things like that.
We run out of diesel and can't move trains and trucks.
Yeah.
Food supplies dwindle thanks to global warming or climate change, as they say nowadays.
Alleged.
It is I believe in it. I mean, global warming.
Well, again, that's the thing. Alleged, quote unquote. I mean, we're being tongue in cheek here for
this. Yeah.
It's not hot out today.
I mean, it was debunked like 6 years ago.
All right, guys. Well, that was the Darker Side news stories. We got a little diversity there. All right, well, we're going to get into the Darker Side movie review.
Fuck yeah.
Today's movie is called One Last Kill by It Came From 508 Productions. It was written for the screen by a James D. LeMond, Erica Looker, and a Johnny Surrett. I think that's how you say it. I know that Johnny was the guy who came up with the story. He was the story by. And then these guys, the rest of them, James DeLamond, Erica, and Johnny all wrote it for the screen.
No way.
This movie was directed by James LeMond, and this was first published in February of 2017, so a little over like a year and a half ago. The description, Carl Stefano is looking for an escape from his past, an escape from his addictions, and an escape from himself. His searches stop short when he meets a young hitchhiker promising him one last fix, but he will soon learn, when looking for one last kill, no debt goes unsettled.
Wow. Yeah, that is a very good description.
Yeah. I would have had a harder time, I think, personally writing that description. And I think they did a great job of it.
Fuck yeah.
But this movie is a local movie to our area, New England, Massachusetts. And it's, what, 28 minutes long?
It's like 30, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, total of 30 with credits and everything else, man. But for a no-budget, low-budget film and a bunch of local dudes getting together and making shit happen, this fucking movie's killer. I mean, you and I watched it originally, Forrest, we were talking about those first, like, probably 5 minutes.
So real quick, let us right now make a pact, you two gentlemen, to not spoil this movie for people. Or it's a short, really.
I don't want to spoil it.
I think we should encourage everybody to go watch this. I mean, it's very fun, and for a small cast of characters,
and the pacing
building,
is great.
Pacing's fantastic for a small cast of characters building this movie. It is very professional.
Well, yeah, like what I was about to say is that with the with that first scene when they're in the car, and again, we're not spoiling anything, but when him and I were discussing it, the audio track behind the two camera cuts is the same, and we weren't sure if they had did it with two separate cameras simultaneously or they did an amazing job in edit afterwards.
One camera, I believe. I think it's one camera.
So it's what they ended up doing, and I mean, they were flawless with it. With the split screen, with going from one cut to the next cut.
With the audio.
The audio in the background never changed. So I'm like, this is just an amazing, either an amazing job with camera work
audio
and
mixing.
Audio at the same time, or just one shot with two separate cameras with the same audio. Either way, it was done wonderfully.
Oh, yeah.
The transitions in all of this, the effects, I think, were amazing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, cut scenes, obviously, you know, practical effects. It takes a lot of money for special effects, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, the way they did it for those certain scenes was amazing. All right, as I was saying, guys, I really enjoyed the actual production of this. The story was amazing. And, again, without, like Herman said, without giving away any of the plot and the story, man, it's really good.
It's amazing.
And especially since, I mean, I know that they don't have a big production budget at all. They're local boys. It came from 508s. Is one of the coolest sites out there right now. And, and they do some really good video blogging. Vlogging. Or podcasting or video podcast or whatever. But what did you think about it, Forrest?
I loved it, and I'm not gonna lie, I love films that maybe we should drink some. I don't know.
No booze this morning.
I know, but coffee. we're all caffeine addicts over here. I like how, especially like when it comes to shooting in New England, I like how he put just a little bit of emphasis with like in the beginning where it's like we're in New England, we're in Massachusetts, you know, like we love our state.
Well, the production company itself, it came from 508.
Yeah.
If you're from Massachusetts, you know the 508 area.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ride from 508 to Springfield, they talk about that. Yeah. So, like, that, you know, hour and 10-minute ride.
Exactly.
I love it. I'm on the edge of my seat the whole time.
It was
seriously.
It really was very well written. It was well acted. It was so wonderfully edited together that it really was a fun 29 minutes. I highly recommend anyone to go watch this movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and James LeMond, the director of this, he has a cameo in it. I think a few other of them do, too.
I didn't even notice it, to be honest.
No, we didn't until the end credits. Until the end credits.
He's a really nice guy, too.
Yeah. Yeah, get to know him. Get to know these guys on Facebook and subscribe to them on YouTube. It came from 508. They've got some really interesting things in the pipeline. So apparently this movie, I think, is going to be the first of a three-part kind of like not series, but what they call a
trilogy.
Yeah, a trilogy. You know, anthology.
Trilogy. Yeah.
was it One Last Kill is the first part of it came from the 508's production anthology series, The Ties That Bind.
Okay.
Oh, I like that.
They have another movie out coming out soon, very soon. I think they're in post right now and just trying to get it all together.
He was telling me about that.
I think they had finished recording a little earlier in the year, it's called The Box. You can check out the trailer.
Looks good.
Came from 508 on YouTube or on their Facebook page. So yeah, so again, just check those guys out on their Facebook. It came from 508 Productions and their YouTube. Check out everything that they've got. And again, they've got access to all their other material and videos and stuff that they do on the YouTube site.
Oh yeah,
really, really happy to get to review that from that perspective. I mean, we could do the story, we could ruin it, but I don't want to.
No, I don't either.
I don't want to.
It's literally a perfect 30-minute movie.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a wonderful short. Yeah, definitely watch it and let us know what you think out there.
Absolutely, and check those guys out. Again, we don't want to ruin any of the story. We don't want to do any of that for you because it is such a short film and it's jam-packed with just
start to finish.
Yeah,
it's
such a good thing. Well, guys, that was The Darker Side, a movie review of It Came from 508 Productions, One Last Kill.
One Last Kill.
I'm super, super impressed by all of them, the direction, the editing. It was all great.
Plus the name, it sounds like a Slayer song.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, there's some heavy metal aspects of it for sure.
Hell yeah.
All right, guys, well, we're going to get into our segment, Diving Deeper into the Darker Side, Serial Killer Edition.
Serial Killer Edition.
Ooh, yes. And serial killers we have. These are America's first serial killer, the Harp brothers. These are two presumed brothers, one named Micajah and the other Wiley Harp. They're likely first cousins, not necessarily brothers. Anyway, they were sons of Scottish immigrants who settled in North Carolina around the 1760s. So during the War for Independence, we like to call it the Revolutionary War. War of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, during the War for Independence, the Harp brothers, being of a British loyalist family, joined what is known as a Tory gang. Basically, they were British supporters who went on raids and basically tried to screw up anything having to do with anyone who was not a supporter of the king. They were known for attacking families of rebels, killing, stealing, murdering, raping, all the good stuff, I guess.
Tories were very infamous at that time period for being brutal because, I mean, they were loyalists to the crown and whatever they could to get on the crown's side, they would do, and they were pretty brutal about it. They were just not good people, and especially a lot of these people were Southern people who had a lot of to lose with independence, or at least what they thought.
Yep.
So they weren't afraid of doing what they had to do to get what they needed to, you know. Yep. And backing the crown was, you know,
I need some ass, boy.
Well, what they thought would get them the most, because the crown is what, you know, they weren't about independence. They just were okay with being part of the crown.
So the young Harp boys were known to fight alongside the British, including the battles of Blackstock's Farm and King's Mountain in 1780 and Cowpens in 1781. I want you guys to understand also that the preliminary articles of peace were not signed with Britain until November 30th of 1782. So that's about when the war actually ended.
It's 6 years after we signed our Declaration of Independence in 1776. So it took quite a bit of time for all of this turmoil to get to head.
Oh, wow.
And for the Harps, the war never ended.
Yeah.
Anyway, so after the Battle of Yorktown in 1781, which Hamilton fans will know of, there's a delightful song about that.
Mm-hmm.
After the Battle of Yorktown, a lot of the Tory gangs were sort of forced out. The British were effectively overthrown on land. There were some naval battles, and as Dave pointed out earlier today, there were some skirmishes on the shores as well. The Harps, along with a lot of other loyalists and alleged Cherokees as well, were pushed over the Appalachians into Tennessee. Well, what is now Tennessee, anyway? At the time, the Appalachians were extremely rugged, very dangerous, and wild. It's sort of the perfect place for these boys to continue their streak of violence.
Yeah, and I mean, the Appalachians in and of themselves as of today are still secluded, closed off. These people are very okay with being woodsy people. They're are down to earth people. And they don't really want outsiders in their area, just like the original Appalachian people.
Yep.
You know, they've always been outsiders. They've always wanted to just live up in the woods like Sasquatch and Bigfoot, yep. I guess, and just be away from society and do their own. And I mean, you can't blame them.
That's how I feel.
But
we should all go. We should all go. Get off the grid. So the Hart Boys gained the reputation for partnering with the Cherokee and going on raids, pillaging farms, raping, and murdering. This is where Big Harp may have actually picked up his tomahawk, which you'll see coming up in the future. And that brings me to another point. They are referred to frequently as Big and Little Harp, and I will be using that terminology in this story. Big Harp is Micajah Harp, and Little Harp is Wiley. And again, I mentioned that they were referred to as brothers. However, Big Harp and Little Harp, definitely, aside from the size difference, were very different looking human beings.
They had a couple of different baby daddies.
Most likely.
But closely related.
So, on one of these raids, the brothers kidnapped Susan Wood and Maria Betsy Davidson, who Big Harp actually adopted both of these women as his wives.
As was the way of the woods at that time.
Wait, two women?
Yeah, yes. Why not? Sister wives.
Yeah, this was an accepted practice and probably still is in some parts of the U.S.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so Big...
Yeah, I guess.
I guess. Forest is horrible.
I'm not a huge supporter of
polygamy?
That kind of lifestyle. Sorry.
we found your line.
Yeah. Just because those types of people are the ones that want people like me dead. So.
Well, fair enough. The enemy of my enemy. That's
yeah, exactly.
All right, so Big and Little Harp, along with Big Harp's two wives, moved to Knoxville, Tennessee in 1794. I would like to mention that most of this information is coming from a book, which you should all pick up and read. It's available on Amazon for $2.99. It's called Killer Brothers, A Biography of the Harp Brothers, America's First Serial Killers. It's by Wallace Edwards, and again, available on Amazon. Highly recommend it. But according to this book, it describes a description of the Harps. It describes a description of Knoxville, Tennessee, from a reporter in 1794 who said, quote, "The male inhabitants, even on Sunday, caroused drunkenly in the muddy streets, swore profusely, danced and gambled openly, and without shame of promiscuity, swarmed the plentiful brothels." And then, you know, Disney took over.
Yeah.
Disney took over.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Disney took everything. But that description was probably the perfect reason why the Harps wanted to move to Knoxville at this time.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, they enjoyed the Knoxville lifestyle very much.
Yeah.
That really fit with their life plan.
It just doing what you want to do and getting rowdy with it.
Hell yeah.
So the Harp, I'm going to call them the Harp family at this point because we have two gentlemen and two wives. It's just sort of stacked on one side. Forrest is uncomfortable with that.
My brain, I just, you know, there's some mysteriousness, I guess, going on with that kind of thing, but yeah.
I mean, they did kidnap these two women and made them one of the brothers' wives, so that alone is a little bit interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, a little Stockholm syndrome-y. You know, yeah. They're kind of now in, they're part of the family.
Yeah, yeah, and more on the Harp wives as we continue the story.
Exactly.
So the Harp family built a farm outside of town. This was said to be a front for their more nefarious activities, such as robbing the townspeople of Knoxville to pay for their nonstop partying. Mm-hmm. And that was until there were a bunch of fires that were set, destroying farms and houses in the Knoxville area. Though the Harps, nothing could be proven that this was actually the Harps, they started to get, well, you know, a little bit noticed, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
One story goes that the quote stables of the U.S. War Department's Indian agent were set alight. When the residents rushed to put it out, the Harps ran into town and attempted, but failed, to rob the home of the first governor of Tennessee, John Seaver.
I'm sure he was happy about that.
Mm. During this time period, Little Harp managed to court and marry, and on June 1st, 1797. Which is sort of in and of itself kind of a feat. These guys were suspected of arson. They were crazy frontier-style party animals and were said to be unkempt, to say the least.
Hmm.
I would personally define a Frontier Times unkempt as a rough equivalent to that time when you got hammered, shit yourself, woke up in a dumpster outside of the mall food court, and then, without so much as washing up, went back into town, grabbed a beer for breakfast, and then had one more for dessert.
Hell no yeah. changing, no cleaning up, just, no. you know.
Mm. I'm getting married today!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
With puke and shit all over yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh God.
Yeah, oh, these guys were filthy. Just gross. They just smelled like balls all the time.
Probably one of those, yeah, those guys who come into the bars and you just smell it.
Right away, yeah.
Oh.
Delicious.
It was pretty much Herman and I at the end of our college careers.
A lot of fishiness.
A lot of drinking and trying to get work done.
Oh, yeah. Just crusty.
No time for, you know, cleaning.
No just, time for cleaning.
Just all crusty and soggy. In 1798, their party would stop. After realizing that all of his horses were stolen, a farmer raised a posse to get the harps.
Wow.
Which, this is the time when you could start raising a posse, which is pretty
exciting.
Freedom
of speech.
Freedom of assembly.
Yeah.
Freedom of assembly.
The right
sorry.
To assemble, yeah.
Exactly.
The right to assemble with pitchforks and torches. when this posse arrived at the harp homestead, they did find that the harps had lit out. These guys are just magical at getting out of the situations they get themselves in.
Great manipulators, right?
I don't even know if they're great manipulators or if they just had like ears everywhere. But
yeah.
I picture them setting up little posts around town in hidden spots just for getting out equipment and supplies. You know, little encampments everywhere.
It's quite possible. Yeah. I mean, these are some rugged individuals.
They're smart. They're hill folk and they're tree folk and they're from Appalachia. They're from the woods, guys. They grew up in North Carolina as well, which was pretty unsettled. You know, rugged and rural at that time as well.
Yep.
Just so hot in the summertime with no showers.
Oh God.
Eventually, the horse thieves, being the harps, were caught red-handed with the stolen horses. They were brought back to face justice, and that's the end of the story. The harps actually managed to escape, but as the farmer had his horses, he really didn't care about pursuing the harps.
Well, all he wanted was his horses back. He didn't give two shits about who stole it.
Yeah, all the dude ever wanted was his rug back.
It's on my rug,
pissed
man.
Pissed on my rug, man.
Hell yeah.
Stole my horses. Those horses really tied the stable together.
Yeah, totally.
So while there were not a lot of details provided, the story goes that the harps ended up at a place evidently called by the locals, quote, Hugh's Rowdy Groggery. And they settled in for a good old-fashioned drinking bout with a man called Johnson. The harps drank with their new friend, and everyone had a blast singing frontier karaoke, playing drinking games, starting a new business, solving the world's problems, and telling the bartender how much they loved him.
As any good night at a bar goes.
Yeah, oh, certainly. You got to tell your bartender you love him, tip them well.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so the following week, Johnson's body, their drinking buddy, was found drifting in the Holstein River. He had been disemboweled, and rocks were placed in his belly to sink the corpse. This clearly didn't work. Excuse me. Hughes, the groggery owner, was blamed for the crime, and he was actually run out of town, but to the point where he left the country.
Mm.
So he was accused of killing this gentleman and floating him in the river.
Mm.
The details of the murder really weren't provided.
It's just how they found him.
Yeah.
Wow. Obviously, I mean, nobody was there to report exactly how they disemboweled him and how much did they enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know.
Enough to remove his organs and put rocks in his body cavity and throw him in the river. That takes some time.
Wow.
So yeah, some care, some love. You know, you got to be into it to actually do something like
and
that.
And there's no
I think.
Showers, yeah. No gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they might have had gloves. They probably made humans.
They were
gloves.
Near a river. They probably took a quick bath afterwards.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So crusty. This is the first known victims of the harps, and most certainly wouldn't be the last. Otherwise, we would not be talking about them today.
Mm-hmm.
So before we move on, let's talk about the one that got away. The harps headed back over the Cumberland Gap towards the Virginias and famously bumped into a Methodist preacher named Lambeth, who they, of course, robbed.
Right.
In his belongings, they found a Bible, and inscribed therein was a quote from General George Washington. Big Harp actually was noted as saying, "This is a brave and good man, but a mighty rebel against the king."
Yeah.
He then asked, "This here Bible mean you a man of the cloth?" The preacher nodded his agreement, and the Harp brothers left him by his campfire and headed off into the wilds. As they faded into the bush, they called out, "We are the Harps." The grim reality of how close he had come to death must have become very clear for the preacher as the infamy of the Harp brothers grew.
Yeah, I mean, he probably became famous for his story after this because, again, he was one of the few who actually weren't destroyed by the Harps in their endeavors.
Yeah, 220 years later, and we all know his name.
Yeah, exactly.
And all he had to do was live.
Yeah.
The boy who lived, right?
Yeah.
So the next actual victim was a man named Peyton. He was an unfortunate peddler traveling alone in the wilderness, which is very ill-advised at that time period. The Harps took his horse, some of his goods, and murdered him.
Wow.
Then, while traveling into Kentucky, the Harps ran into two travelers from Maryland named Bates and Paca. The Harps said hi in their way by shooting Bates in the heart, killing him instantly. Paca was shot a little less expertly. They were using muskets, after all. He was wounded, and while struggling to get up, Big Harp killed him by cleaving his head in twain with a tomahawk.
Again, coming back to the infamous tomahawk that Big Harp was a
Big Harp loved his tomahawk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that must have been a fun tool that he got, you know, while fighting alongside the natives.
Yeah, and you could smoke pot out of him too.
Yeah.
Holy shit! Maybe he smoked pot too.
Probably. Everybody did. right. So another one of their murders, while they were just traveling around, they killed a man by the name of Thomas Langford. He had bought them breakfast in a town called Crab Orchard. You see, he had a little silver and let that slip as he was paying for the meal. The body of Mr. Langford was found in the leaves by some drovers. Basically, their cattle freaked out when they saw a dead body and just stopped. This time, though, knowing that the Harps had seen Thomas Langford last, they assembled a posse to capture the Harps.
Of course. I mean, these guys are not... This isn't the first time that a posse have been after them, so they're used to it now. You know, they've got chronologically here almost six serial murders at this time. You know, you would think, are they opportunists, or I think they actually get off on this?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, because, I mean, as you're walking around in the wilderness, somebody buys you lunch, they got a little silver, you steal their money, kill them. It's, you know, win-win if you're that sort of...
Yeah.
The thing that makes them...
So inclined.
I think in this aspect of America's first real serial killers is that they took some time on some of these deaths to just...
Oh, yeah.
To be brutal. And you don't necessarily do that if you don't get enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
If you're an opportunist and you're just there to steal, you kind of kill or pop off somebody real quick and get away. But they took some time.
Yeah, to be honest with you, to me, it sounds like they were very well... great manipulators, you know, like they go by a really nice guy, they do whatever he wants to do with them, and then they kill him, you know, it's a win-win, you know?
Get a little drunk afterwards and then slice his stomach open, put some rocks in it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they had to like it. They weren't killing these people just because they were stealing from them. They killed the man that bought them breakfast, you know?
Exactly.
Yep.
I don't even think this is the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
As a part of their brutality. I think further information to come.
Makes me scared to be nice.
Yeah. Don't buy crusty frontiersman breakfast.
Yeah.
That's the moral of the story. So the Harps and their women were actually apprehended while they were on the run, and they were jailed on December 25th, 1798. Merry Christmas, boys.
Wow.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Hey, we got you a gift. It's called a box made out of iron bars. And we've got really nice suits for all of you guys. They're black and white pinstriped. So enjoy your time here.
I don't know if my handbag goes with the black and white stripes.
It definitely goes with your piss and shit stains. So, you know, here you go.
You know, they gave
Merry Christmas.
They gave him clean clothes and three squares a day. That's probably pretty decent for a little while. They were charged with the murder of Langford. In evidence, among the Harp's possessions were a Freemason's apron, clothing, and a book said to having belonged to Langford. The judge found the evidence was there to hold the prisoners for trial in the district court.
Well, and you and I know this firsthand, John, but a Freemason's apron, especially if they've been traveling with it for a long time, is very distinct to that person. And, you know, people in the town would know that Freemason's apron belonged to so-and-so.
Yeah, usually they're signed on the lap of the apron to a person from the lodge itself.
The lodge itself, exactly.
Yeah. So because of this, and there was other damning evidence, in the book, Langford actually kept detailed records of all of his expenses. And he had written down that he had purchased lunch for these two gentlemen.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
Yeah, so he basically put the coffin nails in for these guys. So the harps were transferred to Danville Prison, which was a log building, no doubt with a sheriff dozing lazily in a tilted chair on the front porch with an old sleeping hound.
As is the stereotypical Southern jail, yeah.
Yeah, as is the style at the time. I think they still do that, actually. Yeah. And again, these are wooden jails. Anyway, the jailer, in his infinite wisdom, bought horse locks and nailed these locks to the floor with the harp brothers securely in irons. They would surely face justice.
Exactly.
Oh, and the harp women, Maria and Susan Harp, anyway, were pregnant at the time of their capture and gave birth to children in the Danville prison.
Wow.
This actually got a little bit expensive for the jailer, and you can see actually see the accounts of what they were purchasing. They had to buy extra whiskey because they had children. I don't really understand that, but they did, yeah. And more sugar because children eat sugar, like exactly. Hummingbirds, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any, but I do believe you put up a red feeder and your children just go lick it, and then they go back to whatever they were doing.
Yeah, flitter away, exactly. That's how parenting has been going for me, so yeah.
It seems to be working. Your child is always very, very happy and hyper. Yeah. So the expenses were said to decrease when the Harp brothers escaped.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
They had somehow managed to cut a hole in the side of the wooden jail, possibly with the nails that were used to attach the chains to the floor. They did leave their growing family behind. Rumors around Danville soon began to arise that John Beagler, who was the jailer, was in league with the Harps. And had taken a bribe to assist in their escape.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, if you're going to get a decent amount of money to help these boys out, and you know, you could go live your life somewhere else with a farm and a nice pretty lady, and
hell yeah,
and have some kids and grow some chickens and shit, along with grow some chickens and raise some corn.
Hell yeah, churn some butter.
Yeah, it's way better than sitting in front of a jail.
Exactly.
In the South. He actually did buy land and lived the rest of his days as a wealthy farmer. So,
excellent.
Yeah, you're more right than you know, Dave.
Yeah.
Eventually, the three Harp wives found themselves in a courtroom with a sympathetic judge who released them.
Yeah, I mean, come on. They just had some babies. They've got these crazy-ass guys that can't, they have no control over them. And, you're a sympathetic, liberal-type judge back then. You're like, well, it ain't these women's problems.
Mm.
Let them off.
And you have to house, like, at least five people. It's expensive.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, there is also that. They let them go because they didn't want to fucking feed them anymore.
But the escape of the Harp boys did not go unnoticed. It really upset the governor, who assigned John Belanger to pursue them in Kentucky and elsewhere if necessary. So, Belanger...
And his posse. Of course.
Caught up with the fugitives traveling on foot in the woods. They stopped to glare at each other in a typical old western style Enrico Morricone staring contest. Belanger, with eyes squinting against the sun, first set his gaze on Big Harp, a man of 6 feet, with piercing black eyes and matted black hair. Little Harp had cold blue eyes beneath a shock of red hair. Belanger and his crew were locked in the glaring cold eyes of the Harp boys when the screech of a hawk overhead broke the spell, and the harps darted. Belanger and a man from his posse named Skaggs went off in separate directions in pursuit of more men to apprehend the harps. They were actually incredibly unlucky with that.
Yeah, I'm sure they were.
Yeah, they went to a bunch of loggers who were like, no, we're going to actually do some logging. Sorry, boys.
Yeah.
Right. Skaggs went to the house of Colonel Daniel Trabue, who actually refused to join as well, as he was waiting for his son to return, who had set out with his pet dog to a neighbor's house to borrow some beans and flour.
So he was waiting for his little boy to come back, going, I can't do this because my boy's out on an errand, and I'm gonna wait here because that's a little bit more important.
Yeah, so the boy and his dog are just running to the neighbor's house to grab some flour and beans. While the two men, Skaggs and Trabue, were having a conversation, the dog returned, beaten, bloody, and alone.
Only the dog?
Just the dog.
The boy was not with the dog, but the dog was beaten, bloody, and alone?
The dog was beaten, bloody, and alone, yeah.
Good Lord.
Oh, my God.
With new purpose, the colonel and Skaggs began a frantic search between the two farms and found an encampment. The harps had been there, as was evidenced by a slaughtered cow and two pairs of bloody moccasins left behind. Evidently, the harps had used the cow to make some new frontier Jordans for their escape.
I like that. Like that, you know, they're gonna have some classy kicks, man.
Oh, you do.
Those kicks be whack, bro. So we need some new ones.
You definitely do.
I mean, they slaughtered a fucking cow and used the fresh
leather to make some bloody moccasins.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. The crusty people. The boy, He was found a few days later, having met a similar fate to the cow, bloodied and barely recognizable in a sinkhole. He had been savagely beaten.
Wow.
Word of the Harp's killings got to the governor of Kentucky, James Garrod, who had put a $300 price on the heads of Big and Little Harp. That is $50,000 today, boys.
That's a lot of money. $300 back then, for sure. I mean, we're talking late 1780s, 90s?
1790s, yeah. And that is where we will leave the story today. We'll pick up on the manhunt and the fate of the Harp boys in the next episode.
On the Harp Brothers Part 2, guys.
Fuck yeah.
Man, that's crazy. This is an interesting tale because, I mean, again, you never think about the colonial time.
No.
Late 1700s. I mean, these guys are... I think we've just scratched the surface a little bit. I think there's a lot more brutality to come.
And these guys were, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, definitely the extra Gucci guys of their time. That's for sure.
I couldn't put it better myself. I absolutely agree with you. It's they really go above and beyond when it comes to killing. Killing's my business and business is good, as they say.
All right, guys. Well, that was the Harp Brothers Part 1, Diving Deeper into the Darkest Side, Serial Killer Edition.
Fuck yeah.
Very awesome, man. Very awesome. Again, interesting topic. I was not aware of these gentlemen until a listener of ours.
Me neither.
Suggested this. Greg Kosnowski.
Oh, nice.
Greg. Yeah, he's in
PDT. Bring Your Death Trap. Exactly. Check those
guys
out.
Thank you, Greg.
So he's the one who wanted this topic done, and hopefully we've done a good job so far. Part 2 coming next episode, people.
Fuck yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's been the Darkest Side podcast for today.
Yep.
I am David Pottle. You can find me on Facebook. You can find my band Frenemy at Frenemy, F-R-N-E-M-Y, on Facebook, Twitter, etc., etc. You'll find me on all the fucking social media bullshits. And guys, just rate our podcast on whatever format that you're listening to. iTunes and Google Play help out a lot.
Please.
Keep playing, download, and listen to the episodes, everybody. That's pretty much all I got. Forrest, what do you got real quick, bud?
You know, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. You can find me also on Forrest G Media on Facebook and YouTube. You can find, you know, our podcast, DCP, on DCP Network on Facebook.
You got to check out Forrest's new podcast, too.
Getting Lost in the Forest. Our old segment is now an official podcast.
Boy's growing up!
It is. New podcast, separate segment. You can also find all of us on, you know, Spotify, Podbean, Google Play Music, iTunes. I prefer Spotify, you know, all the good shit. You can even find my GLITF, Getting Lost in the Forest, GLITF, on Facebook. Mainly right now on Podbean, Google Play Music, and iTunes.
Cool.
And please check me out because it's amazing. And thank you, guys.
Herman.
I'm Herman. You can find me if I want you to find me.
Hell yeah.
Or just go to Instagram.
Yeah, Herman Brow and Instagram.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, that's been the Darker Side podcast.
Hell yeah.
Come back to the darker side.
Fuck yeah. Johnny, Herman, let's play more footsie.
Okay.